time with the family. But she wanted to come down here. She wiped at her eyes. Well, I understand. She's 18. I can't expect her to come home every chance she gets. I sent her a little money. Told her to send me a postcard. She stared blankly into space for a moment. I wonder if she did. Did any of you speak to her last week? She texted Ella Monday night, Mrs. DeWalt said, looking quickly at her daughter. Right, honey? Ella nodded but didn't look up. She sent me a picture of her drink. It was one of those tall ones with an umbrella. She shrugged awkwardly. We used to send each other random pictures of our food. It started as a joke because she hated the food at Berkeley. I kept sending her pictures of Mom's cooking. She'd send me back pictures of whatever disgusting things she had to eat. Did she say anything else? Veronica asked gently. Ella just shook her head. Veronica cleared her throat awkwardly. Was it like Haley to go out a lot? Was she a heavy partier?
Well, it's obvious from that picture she was drinking, Crane pointed out. She was probably drunk the whole time she was here.
That's not Haley, Crane. Mrs. DeWalt gave him a pale and wounded look.
Oh, yeah? You really think Haley came down to drink Shirley Temple's at Chili's and get to bed by 10 p.m.? You've seen how the girls act down here. Wasted, entitled, stupid, he said bitterly. His nostrils flared.
Congratulations, Crane. You've just received the One of These Things Is Not Like the Others award. The prize? A full background search and my undivided attention.
Margie's gaze shot towards him.
What difference does that make? What are you saying, she deserved to go missing?
No, of course not, he said quickly, holding up calloused, stubby hands. He took a breath, his voice calmer. But look, Veronica said she needs to get a complete picture so she can retrace Haley's steps, right? I'm just trying to help.
Haley's a good girl.
Margie sounded almost pleading. She looked on the verge of tears again. Veronica set her notebook on her knee and glanced between them. Crane seemed to hesitate, then leaned toward his stepmom.
If we want to find Haley, we need to tell Veronica everything we can about her. The truth is, Haley's changed.
She has not, Margie whispered, but Crane continued as if he hadn't heard her.
She came home at Christmas and she was like a different person. She was moody, you know, coming in at weird hours, ignoring the rest of us, hiding out in a room. I don't know what was up with her, but she sure didn't seem to be happy.
His voice was neutral, but Veronica thought she saw a vindictive gleam in his eye as he spoke. Veronica glanced at Margie. Tears started down her face. She half expected Mike or Ella to go to her, to comfort her, but no one moved.
Did you notice anything different about her behavior, Mrs. DeWalt?
For a moment, Margie looked like she wanted to argue. Then she gave a helpless shrug.
I don't know anymore,
she said miserably. She put her hands over her mouth and closed her eyes, sobs rolling through her body like waves. Veronica glanced around the room. Every few moments, Mike would lift his coffee to his lips and take an absent sip. Ella looked like a creature huddled in a shell, hard and pensive. Crane kept jiggling his knee up and down. Behind them, on the counter, the digital frame showed a photo of Haley at 12 or 13, her dark hair streaming from beneath her hat. She wore a softball uniform and stood with her arm hooked around her mother's neck. Margie flashed a peace sign at the camera, her hair cut with the same bangs as her daughter's. A personality change at college? Not such a strange thing. Wasn't that what was supposed to happen? You left home and tried out new identities? Jocks suddenly took up clove cigarettes and went to art history lectures. Button-down valedictorians traded in books for bongs until everyone got bored and tried something else. Then again, a lot of psychological disorders showed up in the late teens. Depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. A real shift in behavior could have been a warning sign.
Did she say anything specific that might lead you to think she was unhappy?
Crane shook his head. Not to me.
And she didn't mention anything about her life in Berkeley that might explain it? Anything about school, teachers giving her a hard time, classes that were overwhelming? That's what I assumed it was, Margie said, her voice choked. But she wouldn't talk to me about it.
Veronica sat for another moment, pretending to write in her notebook. She wanted to give them another few beats to think about anything they'd seen, anything they'd heard. But nobody spoke. The only sounds were Margie's soft sniffles and the air conditioning kicking on. Finally, Veronica closed the notebook and slid it into her bag.
All right, Mrs. DeWalt, if you can get me those phone numbers, I think I have enough to get started with. I'll leave you my card. You can call me day or night if you think of anything that might be helpful.
Margie rummaged through her enormous quilted purse, emptying its contents on the counter while Veronica waited by the door. Crane had turned the TV back on. The host of the nature show was now describing how a canoe full of school children had capsized when a monstrous fish rammed against the hull.
There were no survivors, he said soberly.
Suddenly, Mike DeWalt looked up from his coffee. His eyes, nestled in swollen pouches of flesh, were light blue and surprisingly warm.
Be careful out there, he took a shaky breath. I don't care what the sheriff says. Someone in this town took my baby, and whoever did it is still out there.
He held her gaze for another moment, then looked down. Veronica's heart gave a lurch as Margie shoved a scrap of paper into her hand. A phone number was scrawled on one side.
That's the cell number one of them left me. I don't know which one.
Thanks. Veronica slid it into her wallet. Hang in there. I'll be in touch. Outside the room, she took a deep breath and glanced at her cell phone. It was nearly 2, coming up on time for her meeting with Lamb. She was almost at the elevators when she heard footsteps behind her. She turned to see Ella DeWalt hurtling determinately after her. The girl didn't speak until she caught up with Veronica. Panting slightly, she jerked her head toward the terrace beyond the glass doors.
I only have a minute. Mom thinks I went down to get something from the vending machine.
Wordlessly, Veronica followed her. The air on the terrace was warm and dusty, the tile beneath their feet sun-baked. A glittering blue pool twinkled in a courtyard below, a handful of spring breakers floating on rafts. Ella pulled a pack of Camels out of her back pocket and lit a cigarette with shaking fingers. When she noticed Veronica watching her, she offered her the pack.
Hasn't anyone ever told you those aren't good for you? Veronica said, waving her off.
Yeah, well.
She took a quick drag and exhaled.
Neither is living in a 2-bedroom hotel suite with your family.
Has it been like this the whole time?
It's always like this.
The girl leaned on the balustrade like it was too much effort to hold herself upright. Veronica didn't say anything. Ella DeWalt looked brittle, nervous. She didn't want to push her. She smoked in silence for a moment, carefully blowing her smoke away from Veronica. When she spoke, her voice came in a rapid tumble of words.
Crane can be an asshole, but he's not exactly wrong.
She exhaled loudly through her lips like a horse.
Haley was weird when she came home at Christmas.
Can you be a little more specific? The girl shrugged with a quick jerk of her shoulders.
She didn't tell me anything. She always treated me like...
She trailed off, and Veronica could hear the unspoken, like a child.
I don't know, she didn't go out with any of her high school friends the whole time she was there. She just holed up in her room, and she pretended to be sick when it was time to go to my grandma's for Christmas dinner. Not that I blame her, that meal always blows.
Ella made a face.
I overheard her fighting with her boyfriend on the phone a few times.
Veronica raised a brow. So she does have a boyfriend?
Yeah, my mom means well, but she doesn't know half of what goes on in Haley's life.
Do you know her boyfriend's name?
Chad Cohan, Ella said promptly. I've never met him. He goes to Stanford. I thought he looked like a tool in his Facebook pictures.
Veronica nodded slowly. So what's the story with Crane? A cagey, uncomfortable look suddenly flashed across the girl's face. She glanced down at her hands as she spoke.
I don't know, she said softly. He was mad when Mom and Dad sent Haley to school. She got a really good scholarship, but they're still spending a ton of money on it.
Why does that make him mad?
He's been unemployed for ages.
Ella scuffed her sneakers along the ground.
Last summer, he asked them for money to start a t-shirt printing business. They said no.
Since then, he's been pissed. He thinks they're playing favorites, paying for her school and not his screen printing stuff. Sibling rivalry is not pretty. Fucking tell me about it. She stabbed her cigarette out viciously against the bottom of her shoe, then pocketed the butt. Look, I have to ask, is there any way Haley would disappear like this on her own steam? The girl hesitated, then shook her head. I kind of wish there were. I wish she'd just show up and say, sorry guys, I didn't mean to make you worry. But there's no way. Not with Mom sending her panic text every single day, not with... Her voice faltered a little, but she steadied herself. Not with me sending pictures of every single meal I've had in this suck-ass town. Mom's right. Even if she'd made some kind of mistake, she wouldn't do that to us. She shoved her hands in her pockets and took a deep breath. I guess I better go back. Mom freaks out if I'm out of her sight for more than 10 minutes. She looked at Veronica for a moment. Her eyes were fierce and apprehensive at the same time. Are you going to find her? It was almost unconscious, the way Veronica's jaw tightened, the way her shoulders squared off, her fingers curling into fists. She hadn't realized it before that moment, before meeting Ella's eyes, but now she was sure. I won't stop until I do. Chapter 5. The Balboa County Courthouse occupied a large sandstone building in downtown Neptune, 15 or so blocks from the Grand. Its front steps were smooth and worn, power washed daily to keep the city's grime at bay, though these days the sheriff's department was as dirty as they came. She'd spent half her life haunting the sheriff's department. Her father had started as a deputy, and when she was 9, he'd been elected sheriff. She and her mom used to visit him on lunch breaks, and in later years, she did her homework in an empty interrogation room while eavesdropping on the dispatch. After Lily Kane's murder, when a recall election had ousted Keith from office, when she should never have had to set foot in that cesspool again, some invisible path always seemed to lead her back. Visiting Logan or her friend Weevil Navarro in lockup, prying information out of the too-adorable-for-words Deputy Leo D'Amato, now a detective down in San Diego. Reporting her own rape, and then being laughed out of Don Lamb's office, humiliated and aching. But that was ancient history, right? She made her way down the familiar hallway, decorated in shades of terracotta and gold, and turned into the sheriff's department. No one manned the tall wooden reception desk. 3 or 4 officers sat at their desks, working on computers or talking on the phone. She didn't recognize any faces. Her father had told her that when Dan Lamb took over, the handful of worthwhile cops left on the force had taken an early retirement or transferred elsewhere, along with Inga, the kind-hearted woman who had been the office manager since Veronica was a little girl. She stood at the desk and waited. No one appeared to notice her, or maybe they just didn't care. One guy seemed to be swiveling his chair away from her as he talked on the phone. No surprise there. She was persona non grata around the sheriff's department. The first thing she'd done when she'd gotten back to town was solve Bonnie DeVille's murder right out from under the sheriff's nose. Dan Lamb wasn't the type to forgive and forget. Then again, neither was she. She caught sight of a tall man in departmental khaki, walking past with his arms full of files. Excuse me, sir, I have an appointment with the sheriff. When the officer turned to face her, Veronica blinked. Norris Clayton? Veronica's voice was breathless, shocked. The man's warm brown eyes flickered over her face and his lips curled up. Veronica Mars, I was wondering when I'd run into you. For a moment they eyed each other warily. In middle school, Norris had been suspended nearly every other week for fighting. By high school, he'd donned the trench coat and combat boots required for discontented youths, and had a weapons collection to make his scowl this side of terrifying. For a while, he'd been suspected of calling in bomb threats to the school, but Veronica had been able to prove his innocence. Beneath his trench coat and fuck the man attitude, Norris was just a regular misfit with a Japanese weapons obsession, and, as it turned out, a crush on Veronica. Now he was barely recognizable, muscular and clean-cut in his crisp khaki uniform, but something in his eyes was just the same, brittle, both wary and resigned, like the world was just bullshit all the way down. Veronica couldn't imagine that working at the Neptune Sheriff's Department would help that feeling. Norris set his paperwork down on the desk and rested his hands on top.
You still working for your dad?
Kind of. More like tentatively with, or perhaps in spite of. Norris's lips curled up into a smirk.
Yeah, well, my dad is just glad I have a job.
Veronica could only imagine. Norris's dad was a law-abiding programmer at Kane Software. He'd once bribed his son with a trip to Japan if he'd stay out of trouble and keep his grades up.
I have to admit I never quite imagined you as an upholder of the peace.
Norris gave a quick snort of laughter.
Yeah, well, we all have to grow up sometime, right?
Then he shrugged, suddenly serious.
I was pissed off about everything for so long. I guess I found a place to put my fight. Anyway, what are you doing here? You out here working a case?
Veronica gathered herself.
Kind of.
I have an appointment with Lam.
Lucky you.
They looked at each other for a moment, and then, at the same time, both broke into grins.
This way.
Norris opened the little gate next to the desk and jerked his head back toward Lam's office. In the hallway outside the sheriff's office, her eyes darted unconsciously at the fallen hero's wall. That was where they hung the photos of all the cops who'd been killed in the line of duty. Down at the bottom was the most recent, Deputy Jerry Sachs, his mustache glossy and perfect in immortality. His picture was hung next to Don Lam's. She stared at both for a moment, complicated feelings fighting inside her. Lam had made her life a living hell in high school, but she'd also come to suspect that he'd grown up in an abusive home. It was that same old vicious cycle. The Lam boys were bullied, they became bullies. And while she'd never thought of Sachs as anything but Lam's gopher, his desire to help her dad investigate the sheriff's department is what got him killed in the end. Now Lam and Sachs were both gone, and something oddly like grief twisted in her gut.
What's she doing here?
She turned to see Sheriff Dan Lam staring at her through his half-open door. Petra Landro sat across from him, her long legs crossed, an impatient grimace on her face. Veronica exchanged glances with Norris, then stepped inside. Lam's office was dim and wood-paneled, with a map of the states on one wall and an American flag in the corner. She smiled sweetly.
Nice press appearance last week. Your hair looked great.
They stared at each other across the desk. Logan had once told Veronica she didn't have any flight, just way too much fight for her own good. Now she felt her hackles rising as she looked at Lam, at his smug leer, at the way he leaned back in his chair like a toad on a choice lily pad, just waiting for nice fat flies to fall into his mouth. He was in his early 40s, tall and fit, with the mildly fussy air of a man vain about his looks. His face was boyish, with a wide, sullen mouth and round cheeks, and he wore his hair in a sleek mane around his ears. Most unsettling were his eyes, the same bright blue as his dead younger brother's. Don Lam had been lazy and inept, a bureaucratic tool, and Dan wasn't much better. He allied himself with the powerful and preyed upon the weak. She had reason to believe he was strategically redistributing evidence. Just 2 months earlier, a Glock 9mm had been planted on her friend Weevil Navarro's unconscious body after Duncan's mom, Celeste, shot him, and while she couldn't prove it yet, she was almost certain the sheriff, or one of his cronies, had planted it on him. And according to public defender Cliff McCormick, Weevil wasn't alone. If there was a dollar to be made, the sheriff's department happily bent the law for the highest bidder.
Close the door, please, Miss Mars.
Petra Landros gestured for her to come in. Veronica shut the door and sat down at a second chair across from Lam. His eyes tracked her closely. She kept her movements casual, almost dismissive, but she felt the tension in her arms and legs, like bent springs poised to snap. Petra turned to look at Lam.
The Chamber of Commerce has decided to hire Miss Mars to work on the Haley DeWalt case. I'd like for you to catch her up on any details you have so she can get started.
You have got to be kidding me.
An ugly flush swept through his cheeks.
Miss Landros, there's no need.
I've already made up my mind on this, Lam.
Petra's face was cool, her voice firm. Her smile widened slightly.
Come on, Dan. With the upcoming election, don't you think you've got your hands full enough already? The Chamber is invested in another Lam administration in the Sheriff's Department. We need you to focus on doing what you do best, keeping the town clean and the riffraff off the streets.
The subtext was so obvious, even Lam couldn't miss it. If you want to keep your funding and your endorsement, you'll play nice. Veronica wished she had a camera to capture the particular shade of violet Lam's cheeks were turning. His eyes flashed towards Veronica with unadulterated loathing. His mouth twisted wildly, as if he was fighting to keep it shut. After a long moment, he grabbed a thin manila file folder and thrust it across the desk at her.
Let's get one thing straight, Lam said as she opened the file. You're here to assist in an investigation, not to run it. You're in my house now, Mars. I set the rules.
She flipped through the folder. There was nothing other than the initial missing persons report filed by Haley's friends 2 days after the party. No notes, no transcripts, no records. She looked up with a raised eyebrow.
This is it? Is one of your rules to not interview people?
Lam gave her a condescending sneer.
What else do you want? A family circus-style map retracing her steps? We took her friend's statement and logged it in the system. There wasn't anything else to do. There's absolutely no evidence that anyone took Haley anywhere against her will. If there were, we would have followed it.
Did you check out the house she disappeared from? Lam flicked his hair back.
First of all, just because that was the last place her friend saw her doesn't mean she disappeared from that house.
She stared at him incredulously.
So your argument for not checking the last place she was seen is that it's just the last place she was seen? Nice. Very thorough.
Something flitted across Lam's face and was gone. Then he shrugged.
My people are already spread thin. I've got most of my guys down by the boardwalks making sure kids don't drown in their own puke. We don't have the manpower to look under rocks for drunken sorority girls.
Veronica gave him a withering look but didn't say anything. She could ask for more, for the rental agreement for the house where Haley went missing, for information on the owners, for the deed. But it'd be just as easy for Mac to access that, not to mention faster, and one less time she'd have to talk to Lam. All kinds of wins.
Anything else we need to discuss? She asked, looking at Petra.
The hotelier was already on her feet, threading her arm through her purse strap.
I don't think so, she said. I realize you don't have much to work with. Please call my office if you need anything at all. My assistant has been instructed to put you right through.
She gave Lam an icy smile.
I want Haley DeWalt found, Lam, and I expect you to assist Miss Mars in any way she requires.
With that, she strode out the door. Lam looked up at Veronica, the color fading from his cheeks, his eyes narrowed to slits. She looked back at him steadily, unflinching, waiting for him to speak first. Watching the sheriff take his medicine from Landros had been fun, but she knew a humiliated Lam was a dangerous Lam. After a long moment, he leaned back in his chair again, but this time without his former swollen smugness. He jabbed his index finger toward her.
I want to hear everything you find out. You don't take a fucking step without reporting it to me, you understand?
So the work is beneath you until you want to take credit for it. Is that it?
Veronica shot him a contemptuous look and stood up. Look for me under a rock if you're curious. I'll let you know when I find Haley DeWalt. And with that, she slammed his office door and left the station. Chapter 6. The number on the scrap of paper Margie DeWalt had thrust at Veronica turned out to belong to a girl named Bree LaFond, one of the three girlfriends who'd taken the bus down with Haley from Berkeley. Veronica called her from the courthouse parking lot to ask if she could meet that evening. The eager, anxious voice on the other end told her that one of them, Leah Hart, had been taken home by her parents the week before.
"She was really upset," she said. "But Melanie and I are still here. We'll tell you anything we can."
They were staying at the Camelot Motel. The sun-bleached building was surrounded by pawn shops, storefront churches, and bars so divey even the spring breakers didn't bother, which meant it was one of the only places the girls could afford after their spring break reservations ran out. Veronica had spent more caffeine-fueled nights outside the motel than she liked to recall. It was a favorite for the kind of trysts that resulted in shattered prenups, messy divorces, and broken hearts. Read, a home away from home for an enterprising young PI. At just after 7, she knocked on the door to their room. From the other side of the blinds, she saw the reddish glow of a table lamp. The girl who answered the door was short and muscular and luridly sunburned. Her strawberry blonde hair hung in an uncombed tangle around her face, and a small silver stud winked from one nostril. She peered out around the edge of the door with startled woodland eyes.
"Hi," Veronica said gently. "I'm Veronica Mars. Are you Bree?"
The girl hesitated, as if she had to think about her answer, then nodded.
"Hi, yeah, come on in."
Veronica stepped into the drab, cramped little room. Two full-size beds were shoved against opposite walls, the faded floral coverlets made from the same material as the curtains. The decor was thrift shop Americana, a painting of ducks taking flight from a lake hung adjacent to one of a small cabin releasing puffs of smoke into a wintry sky. Clothes covered the floor, and an unwashed, sweaty odor mingled with the smell of old takeout. A second girl sat on the far bed, but she stood up when she saw Veronica. Her long dark hair was looped through the hole in the back of her beat-up Dodgers cap. She wore a hoodie and a pair of denim cutoffs, but her curves were obvious even under the baggy clothing.
"Hi, I'm Melanie."
Her voice was husky but even. She held out a hand for Veronica to shake. She glanced around the room, then gestured wryly to the bed.
"Sorry we don't have a chair to offer you."
"No problem." Veronica sat down on the edge of the bed. Bree locked the door and leaned against the chipboard dresser. She chewed on the corner of a fingernail. Melanie sat cross-legged on the other bed, leaning toward Veronica, an intense, focused look on her face. Both girls were a stark contrast to the bright, careless spring breakers on the beaches. They looked ragged-edged and tired, more like kids who'd just finished finals than like kids at the end of a vacation.
"So you guys stayed in town to help with the search?"
Veronica flipped her notebook to a fresh page and jotted down the date and their names. They both nodded. Melanie twirled a lock of brown hair around a finger, coiling it so tight the tip of her finger was bone white.
"Yeah, we've been handing out flyers at the boardwalk."
She took a piece of green paper from a stack on the nightstand and held it up. Haley's senior portrait beamed out from it.
"No one even cares, though."
Bree's voice was so soft, Veronica had to strain to hear it. Her lower lip trembled a little.
"We hand them out to people, and they take them, and they just crumple them up and throw them on the ground a few feet away. No one cares that she's missing."
The words swiped at Veronica, and she flinched. She suddenly realized that this was Bree LaFon's first lesson that people sucked. Veronica remembered that letdown, the way the world suddenly seemed stripped of bright colors, your beliefs toppled like dominoes. She'd learned it when she was 16, after Lily was murdered, and Keith, sniffing out the cover-up but not the truth, had gone after Lily Kane's rich, handsome father. Keith was recalled as sheriff, and suddenly she'd found herself not only friendless, but a pariah. Her friends circled their wagons around the Kane family, and Veronica spent the better part of a year scraping spray-painted expletives off her locker and replacing her slashed tires. And for a while, no one had raised a finger to stand up for her. That had changed, of course. She'd made peace with some of her old friends, Duncan, Meg, Logan. And she'd found new, fierce ones in Wallace, Mac, and Weevil,
She'd come out of it stronger, smarter. But that didn't mean it hadn't hurt.
"Do you think Haley's okay?" Melanie asked, bringing her back to the messy little room.
"I don't know." Veronica took a deep breath. "The last thing I want is to give anyone false hope. I'm going to do everything I can to find your friend, but I need your help. Can you walk me through the last night you were with her?"
The girls glanced at each other, and then Melanie spoke.
"I was on a sailing trip with a bunch of other Berkeley kids, but we got a text from Haley at 7 that she'd heard about some party up the coast. We all met up at the motel. We were at the Sea Nymph last week, closer to the beach, and got ready together. It was a black and white party, so you had to wear black or white to get in," Veronica nodded.
"Sure, somewhere Truman Capote is spinning in his grave."
"Who?"
Bree cocked her head like a curious spaniel. Veronica shook her head.
"Never mind. Where were you that afternoon, Bree?"
She bit her lip.
"Me and Haley and Leah lay out on the beach for a while, but Haley got bored and told us she wanted to wander around. We weren't in the mood, so she went off on her own. A few hours later, she texted us about the party."
"How'd she seem that night while you guys were getting ready?"
"She was fine," Melanie said, picking at the pilled fabric of the bedspread beneath her. "Normal. She told us some guy had invited her and said she could bring as many girls as she wanted if they were as cute as her." She rolled her eyes. "She always eats lines like that up."
"Did she say anything else about this guy? Did you bump into him at the party?"
Again, that subtle exchanged glance. "She didn't say anything else about him, and the party was kind of crazy. If Haley bumped into him, we didn't see it. We were sort of out of it."
Bree took a deep, shuddering breath.
"Okay, let's talk about the party." Veronica looked down at her notebook, where she jotted the address from the police report. "The address you gave the police was 2201 Manzanita Drive, is that right?"
"Yeah," Melanie said. "It's a huge place right down on the beach, a mansion. We showed up around 10. They had security guards at the gate doing pat-downs and bag searches. It was kind of intense."
Veronica frowned. Plenty of Neptune's wealthier families had security precautions, cameras, alarms, the works, and it made sense for someone planning a Gatsby-esque blowout involving crowds of unknown people to hire some extra guards. But what kind of person required a pat-down for a party?
"Did you meet the host?" Veronica asked.
"Well, no one ever came up to us and introduced themselves." Melanie shook her head. "It wasn't that kind of party. The place was packed. I mean, there were bartenders and waiters going around with drinks and more security guards inside, but no one who was, like, obviously in charge or anything."
"From what we heard, there's a party at the house every night during spring break," Bree said. "A couple kids we talked to had been there a few times already."
"Okay, so what did you do when you got there?"
We partied." Melanie's eyes, so eager and so intense just a moment ago, darted away toward the window. "I danced for a while, there was a bonfire on the beach, I played a little pool, you know, party stuff."
Veronica glanced from one to the other, then set down her notebook on her thigh.
"Okay, I get that some of the party stuff might not be the kind of thing you want to write Grandma about, but the more I know about what happened that night, the better my chances of finding Haley. I promise, I'm not here to bust you. I just want to help your friend."
Bree's cheeks were an even deeper pink than before, clashing horribly with her hair. She stared at the ground, eyelashes drooping with shame. But Melanie turned her gaze suddenly and firmly back to Veronica. She was blushing too, but her expression was steady, determined.
"Look," she said. "The thing is, neither one of us remembers a whole lot about that night. We were both pretty wasted. We don't even remember how the hell we got home. And before you tell us it was stupid and selfish to get that fucked up, trust us, we already fucking know."
"Sheriff Lamb didn't believe that Haley was missing,"
Bree said, her voice barely more than a whisper. "We thought if we admitted we were drunk and high, it'd be worse."
Veronica crossed her legs. Okay, why don't we focus on what you do remember? What was Haley like that night? Was she as drunk as you guys were? Was she talking to anyone specific? Bree grabbed a rhinestone-encrusted iPhone from the top of the dresser and started swiping her thumb over the screen. After a moment, she held the phone out to Veronica.
She spent a lot of time with this guy, she said.
The picture on the phone was of a buxom, scantily clad brunette draped across a boy's lap, a far cry from the clean-cut photo of Haley on the missing person flyers. Veronica held it up to see it more clearly. Haley was in a short white dress with a plunging neckline, one spaghetti strap sliding down her shoulder. Her eyes were heavily made up, making her look older than she had in her senior portrait, and a delicate pendant in the shape of a birdcage hung in the shadow of her cleavage. She looked up at the boy through heavy lashes, a small, sensual smile turning up the corners of her lips. The boy was college age, dark-haired, his posture the image of casual grace. His angular, sculpted face ended in a gently cleft chin, a lazy smile hovering around his mouth. One hand rested lightly on Haley's hip, and he watched her with undisguised hunger. You get a name? Veronica looked up at Haley's friends. Both of them shook their heads.
No, but Haley spent the whole night all over him. There are more pictures, Bree said.
Veronica scrolled through. One showed the two of them pressed tight together on the dance floor, Haley's legs between the unknown boys. Another showed her whispering in his ear, one hand on his chest. You took these? She asked Bree. Bree's already pink cheeks darkened.
She asked me to, she said, shrugging. I took them with her phone, actually. You're looking at her Facebook page. She put them up that night.
Bree fidgeted with a gold bangle bracelet at her wrist.
I mean, she seemed to be having a really good time. We were happy she was on the rebound.
On the rebound?
Yeah, Melanie broke in. She and her boyfriend Chad broke up the week before spring break. She almost didn't come with us. She'd been in her room crying her eyes out for a couple days.
Veronica sat up a little straighter, the words jabbing sharp and sudden into her brain. Why'd they break up?
They got in a huge fight over the phone when she told him she was coming to Neptune for spring break, Melanie explained. He goes to Stanford and his spring break is 2 weeks past ours. He didn't want her running off to Neptune unsupervised. Whatever, they've broken up about 5 times this year. We were all hoping it'd take this time, but none of us had much faith.
Not a fan of Chad? Veronica raised an eyebrow. Melanie just rolled her eyes.
We told her time and time again she should get rid of the guy. He's a creep. Controlling, patronizing. He'd tell her what classes to take and didn't want her to party without him. He didn't like her hanging out with us. He thinks we're trashy, Melanie said.
We are kind of trashy, Bree cut in. Melanie flipped her off. A beat later, both girls laughed. It sounded too high-pitched, right on the edge of hysteria. But when they'd settled down, they both looked a little calmer.
Anyway, Melanie said, taking a deep breath, we were all kind of rooting for this guy at the party. He was the anti-Chad.
But if he had something to do with her going missing? Bree's voice trembled.
I mean, if he was the one who took her, or whatever?
Did you see them leave together at any point? Veronica asked. Both girls shook their heads.
But like I told you, Melanie said, that night is pretty hazy.
Veronica looked at the phone again. The photos had been uploaded to Haley's Facebook at 11:57 p.m. on the night of the party. If what Ella said was true, and Haley and Chad's relationship had been mercurial at the best of times, it seemed likely that in the wake of their breakup, Haley was making damn sure Chad saw just how much fun she was having. Veronica pulled up an email Mac had sent her an hour ago with Haley's phone records. Throughout the day, there were a bunch of texts to her friends and one to her sister. Then, at 12:13 a.m., she'd received a phone call from a number registered to Chad Cohan that lasted exactly 53 seconds. There was no activity after that. Has anyone spoken to Chad since Haley went missing? Did anyone call him to let him know? Melanie gave a humorless bark of laughter.
Oh, he called me. Told me it was my fault Haley was missing because I was the one who lured her down to Neptune. I told him if he was so worried, he should come down, help us look. You know what he said? She adopted a lilting, smug voice. She's not my responsibility anymore, Melanie. She made that abundantly clear. For a moment, she looked angry. Then all at once, her face crumpled. Her eyes went shiny with tears, and her lower lip started to shudder. But he's kind of right. I mean, we were supposed to look out for each other. We talked about checking in twice a day on the way down, and we just lost her. Bree hurried to the bed, sliding an arm around the other girl's shoulders. Melanie twitched beneath the shallow sobs. A motorcycle growled on the street outside. From the room next door, Veronica could just make out the murmur of a television. She leaned across the gap between the bed, resting her forearms on her knees. Melanie, if someone did hurt Haley, they're the only ones responsible. Veronica's voice was low and urgent. And if that's what happened, I am going to find them, and I am going to make them pay. Melanie looked up at her from under her baseball cap, eyes wet with tears. Veronica stood up and handed the phone back to Bree. Do me a favor and send me copies. None of the pictures on the flyers show what she looked like the night she disappeared. It might be useful to circulate them. She shouldered her bag. I'm going to ask around about our mystery man. In the meantime, if you two remember anything else about that night, call me right away. The girls nodded. Melanie hesitated, then carefully disentangled herself from Bree and got to her feet. She straightened her cap, then held out her hand to shake Veronica's. We will. We promise. She opened the door, wiping fiercely at her eyes with her free hand. Thanks, Veronica. In the parking lot, Veronica dialed Mac. How hard do you think it'd be to hack into the databases of a major research university? Mac hesitated. Since you're asking me on a cell phone, in front of God and the NSA, impossible. Okay, fair enough. Look, I need to go home and check on Dad, but do you think I could come by your place later? I've got some, overtime work for you. It might be a long night. OT, huh? There was no mistaking the excitement in Mac's voice. It had been a while since she'd had an excuse to take her skill set out to play. Sounds fun. In the meantime, can you get me on a flight to San Jose tomorrow morning? And I'll need a car, something sensible. She thought about it for a moment. Well, not too sensible, though. I need to represent the Neptune Chamber of Commerce in style. Give a girl a BMW for a few weeks and suddenly she's got standards. See you tonight. The moon crested the skyline as she pulled the car out of the parking lot. It had been a week to the day since Haley's disappearance. Now hundreds of innocent kids like Haley were pouring out into the streets for another night of drinking and debauchery, oblivious to just how cruel the world could be. Chapter 7. An hour later, Veronica sat in front of the computer in her bedroom, fingers flying over the keys. Logan's face grinned crookedly from the corner of his most recent email. It was the picture she'd set as his contact photo, taken right before he'd deployed. I wish you could have seen Lamb's face when she told him I had the case. He looked like he'd just swallowed a bug, she typed. It would have made your day. Keith hadn't been there when she arrived home at the little blue bungalow. He was most likely out for a walk. The muscles in his leg needed to be strengthened, so he'd taken to circling the block a few times a day, slowly, deliberately, his cane tapping lightly against the concrete. He was wearing away at his convalescence with the same patience, the same resolve that made him a good detective. Veronica's room, until recently known as the guest room, was decorated with a mélange of high school artifacts and the odds and ends her father had shoved in there before she'd moved back. One of his model ships sat on the dresser, between old photos of her as a little girl. All of her old books, Salinger, Plath, Tool, the literature of choice for the brooding outcast, were lined on the small wooden bookshelf. It was a little surreal to be back under her father's roof after all this time, but maybe a little comforting, too. With all the changes she'd made,
all of the things in her life that didn't make sense. She kind of liked the sight of her old panda alarm clock perched on her desk. She'd just hit send on her email when the familiar Skype chime came singing out of her speakers. She gave a little start. It was Logan. She clicked accept, and his image filled the screen. She could tell her picture wasn't coming in clear for a moment. He stared blankly at the camera for a few beats. It was a strange thing, watching him without his knowing. His long, vulpine face had a stillness she didn't usually see in it, pensive and expectant. His hair was short and spiky. He shaved it himself rather than letting the company barber mangle it month after month, and he wore a blue crewneck t-shirt, his off-duty garb. Just a few inches behind him was a steel wall. She could just make out the corner of some kind of inspirational poster containing eagle feathers and a flag. Then, all at once, a grin broke across his face. "Hey," he said, his voice soft.
"Hey,"
she said, smiling.
"This is a nice surprise."
Usually they had to plan their Skype dates weeks in advance, and then there was still the chance he'd miss them.
"I saw that you were online. I figured I'd take my chance."
His eyes didn't quite meet her eyes. His camera must be a little off-center. She felt like he was staring at her ear.
"What time is it there?"
They always started like this, awkward, banal. And by the time they got over the strangeness, it was usually time for one or the other of them to leave.
"Almost 8.
He glanced to his left, speaking to someone off-screen.
10 minutes? Come on, please.
"Someone's got a timer out, huh?"
"Yeah, it's okay."
He turned back to her ear, smiling. And she wondered what part of her he really was staring at. Her eyes? Her lips? For some reason, the whole thing, the way they could never quite sync up right, made her indescribably sad.
"So, Petra Landros, in your office? I've had that fantasy a few times, but it usually didn't involve a missing person case."
"She's not nearly as sexy in real life. That beauty mark?" She leaned in and lowered her voice.
"It's really just a mole." "Don't tell me that. Right now, the 2004 Victoria's Secret Christmas catalog is all I've got keeping me warm at night."
"Really? That thing must have seen some mileage by now."
"A seaman's life is one of privation," he said soberly. She smirked.
"How's the sinus infection? You still grounded?"
"For another few days. The flight doc says he'll clear me by the end of the week."
"I hate that news," she said softly. "You sneezing is you not on missions."
"This is a life I chose, Veronica."
He said it simply, without irritation or anger, and she knew he was right. He'd joined the Navy because he wanted to fly, because he wanted to do something that might stand a chance of helping someone. She, of all people, had to understand that. He looked to his left again and sighed.
"Yeah, okay, sorry, ma'am."
Then he turned back to face Veronica.
"I gotta go. Hughes's wife just had a baby. He's gotta be online at 0800 to talk to them."
"Okay. Tell him congratulations."
"I will."
He looked at her for another long moment, his honey brown eyes warm and sad.
"You free this Thursday? 3:30 your time?"
"I can be for you."
He smiled.
"It's a date."
She watched him for another half second, and then his screen went black. For a few more minutes, she swiveled back and forth in her office chair. She tried to imagine the aircraft carrier, tried to picture Logan walking down the narrow halls, beneath pallid fluorescent lights, tried to imagine him in the gym or the mess, surrounded all the time by hundreds of people in those cramped quarters. It was almost impossible. She closed her eyes. She preferred to see him on the beach in the early morning, his hair thick with salt, his board tucked under his arm as he trudged up the sand to meet her. She heard the front door swing shut. Dad. Quickly, she shook off her reverie and went out front to meet him. He knelt by the door, unlacing his sneakers, wearing track pants and a t-shirt.
"You're home. I've got news, but it can wait. I want to tell you over dinner. Say, steaks at O'Malley's? My treat?"
She nudged him gently. He shook his head.
"No can do, honey. Wallace is coming over with a pizza. March Madness is underway.
He walked toward the kitchen, cane thudding dully on the hardwood. She followed.
Ah, yes, March Madness, the Rumspringa of college hoops fans. She smiled. Just don't strain anything yelling at the TV.
I make no promises. San Diego State's playing Michigan. There's gonna be some yelling.
He pulled a glass down from the cupboard, then paused to look at her.
So what happened today? It must have been crazy if you can suddenly afford a T-bone.
For a moment she hesitated. He'd been resisting talking about work since she'd moved back in. As if even acknowledging that she'd taken up the family business was tantamount to encouraging her. But there was a difference between crummy infidelity cases and the opportunity to find a missing girl. This was something he could be proud of. You know the Haley DeWalt case? Missing girl, totally ignored by Lamb, current obsession of Trish Turley. Well, guess who's been hired to find her? Me. I'm heading to Stanford tomorrow to talk to Haley's ex-boyfriend. She leaned back against the cabinets. I met with her family today. They're pretty intense. I mean, they're obviously scared about Haley, but there's also just something off about them, especially her brother. He strikes me as kind of creepy. Keith poured a glass of iced tea and replaced the pitcher in the fridge.
Oh, yeah?
She nodded, buoyed by his question. Apparently, she went missing from some party, but get this, no one seems to know whose party it was. The house is up on Manzanita. I mean, it's not like those are low-profile houses up there, so we should be able to figure out who was hosting and ask them some questions, right? I think Lamb knows something he's not telling me. He was doing that weird hair-slicking thing he does when he thinks he's hiding something. Oh, and her friends have pictures of Haley the night she went missing, hanging all over this guy, no name, no information about him, but they looked pretty cozy, and that was just hours before she was last seen. I'm trying to decide if I should ask around about him or if I should keep that information close to my chest. I mean, I don't want to give him the chance to go underground if he gets spooked. She paused. So, what do you think? For a few seconds, he stared sullenly out the kitchen window, his glass half raised to his lips. A frantic, scrabbling feeling filled her chest as he set the glass down with a firm clink on the countertop. Honestly? His voice came a moment later, low and tight. I think you're wasting your talent, your brains, and your entire life, Veronica. I think you should get on the next plane to New York and take the bar exam. The words hit her like shards of glass from a breaking window.
How can you call it a waste? We help people.
She strode over to him, bracing herself against the island and staring him full in the face. This is who we are. It's in our blood.
You're treating it like something you have no control over. Like you just can't help yourself.
Keith's cheeks were flushed, his hands shaking.
But that's just an excuse for giving up on a chance at something better. It's childish, Veronica.
Why don't you want me to be like you?
The desperate eagerness of a moment ago curdled in her stomach, pure and righteous anger replacing it.
Why is that such a shameful thing? Because you could be safe, he shouted. Do you know what it does to me to think of you out there every day?
She inhaled sharply.
Of course I do. How many times have I almost lost you? But for some strange reason, you keep going right back in. Like you just can't help yourself.
The doorbell rang. Both Veronica and Keith froze where they were, faces tight with anger. She could feel her pulse, heavy as a drum beat in her temples.
That'll be Wallace,
Keith said. His jaw was still rigid, but his voice was soft, almost sad. Veronica turned away. I'll let him in. She could see her old friend through the glass door as she approached, a lean, muscled man in jeans and a San Diego State hoodie, an extra-large pizza box in both hands. He grinned when he saw her, that same easy, comfortable smile that had buoyed her even in her most bitter moods. She took a few quick breaths as she opened the door, trying to calm herself, but Wallace was not fooled.
You all right? He asked, the grin fading. Are you kidding me? A fine-looking man just brought me a pizza and I didn't even have to tip him. All's right with the world.
He tilted his head back to size her up, looking skeptical. Wallace Fennell had been her best friend since junior year at Neptune High. He'd been the first person besides her dad she'd been able to trust after Lily Kane's death, and he'd been able to see right through her bullshit from day one. But before she could say anything else, her dad came in from the kitchen.
"Wallace!"
And he pretended to waft the scent of the pizza toward himself. "And pizza! Half Canadian bacon and pineapple, half carnivore's delight, pepperoni, hamburger, sausage, ham, and bacon." Wallace cracked the box open just a little and inhaled. "Topped with Mr. Cho's special recipe marinara and three kinds of artisan cheeses. And a side order of salad because we're watching our figures." "What do I owe you?" "This time's my turn. You got the wings last time, remember?" Veronica stepped back to let him in. "You guys have this whole hunting and gathering thing down pat, don't you?"
"Men gotta eat," Wallace nudged her playfully.
"You watching the game with us tonight?"
No, I have to get over to Max. We're working late tonight."
His face lit up.
"New case, huh? Anything good?"
She glanced furtively at Keith. He'd turned away and was already making his way back to the kitchen.
Yeah, the Chamber of Commerce hired me to find Haley DeWalt."
Wallace did a double take, eyes widening.
"Damn, that is a step up. So what's the problem then?"
She cleared her throat a little, glancing toward the door her father had just disappeared through. She heard plates clatter loudly in the kitchen.
"We're not exactly on the same page."
Understanding dawned in his eyes. Wallace balanced the pizza box on one arm and wrapped an arm around her shoulders.
"Yeah, well, he'll come around."
She didn't answer, but she leaned against him for a moment, feeling the vice around her chest start to loosen a little.
"Would you mind stopping by tomorrow just to check in on him?" she whispered. "I'll be at Stanford until late. He should be fine, but..."
"Yeah, no problem."
He squeezed her shoulder and then let go.
"Say hi to Mac for me. I hope she gets to hack something good, or, you know, whatever it is nerds do for fun."
"I think it involves pwnage." She grabbed her bag. For a moment, she thought about going into the kitchen to try to make some kind of peace with Keith before she left. But what would she say? How could she apologize for who she was? Chapter 8. Veronica arrived on the Stanford campus just after noon the next day. The sky was cloudless, the blue a perfect contrast to the dark red tile roofs. College kids shot around on bikes or ambled past in little groups. A few sat on picnic blankets with books piled around them, taking advantage of the mild spring weather. The air smelled like grass clippings and earth, and she could hear the distant hum of landscaping equipment as the grounds crew made their rounds. It was surreal to be back on the farm. She instantly snapped into her old grooves, taking familiar routes through the corridors of the Mission Revival buildings that, for a while, had been her home. It almost felt as though she'd been gone for a very long summer break and returned to a newer, younger student body. She glanced around, scanning the crowd in case she caught a glimpse of Chad Cohan's crop of reddish-blonde hair. She hadn't called him ahead of time to set up a meeting. She wanted to surprise him. If he was as controlling and jealous as Haley's friends described, she wanted to find out what she could about him before he had a chance to put his guard up. Veronica and Mac had stayed up till 2 a.m. the night before, dredging up anything they could about him, his schedule, his grades, his extracurriculars, anything that might give them an idea of what they were dealing with. What they'd found had been a portrait of a high-achieving student, a clever, talented boy with plenty of advantages. According to his file, his mom was the CEO of an outdoor clothing company in Seattle, and a fierce, focused drive. He was the star attacker of the lacrosse team. His grades were in the top 5% of his class. He had just declared his major as political science, and he was in the process of applying for internships in Washington, D.C. And, as luck would have it, he was taking a small social psychology seminar with Dr. Will Haig, Veronica's one-time academic advisor. Haig's office was in Jordan Hall, a large sandstone building on the main quad. She felt another rush of nostalgia as she pushed her way through the double doors, the familiar dusty scent burning in her nostrils. She'd spent so much time in this building as an undergrad. In addition to fulfilling her pre-law requirements, she'd gravitated to psychology. It was comforting to crunch numbers from clinical studies and analyze data.